Good morning, everyone. Let me go ahead and call the study session to order. This is Thursday, October 11th, 2007, our 7:30 a.m. study session. First item would be to review the items on the October 15th regular council meeting. Pull that packet out.
Yes, sir.
It's a little... not quite as burdensome as we've had in the past, a little shorter. Yeah, no.
There's not a lot of items.
That's correct. Let's go ahead and page one is basically introductory comments, pledge, prayer. Page two, got some annexations, a minor general plan amendment. Vice Mayor.
Item 4B, which is an annexation, says initiated by one of the property owners. I just want to make sure that we're in a place where everybody who is requesting this is, who am I looking at? Thank you. I was looking the wrong way. I'm looking for somebody to come up out here. Is everybody in agreement on this that's applying, or where are we?
Mayor, Vice Mayor, yes, everyone is signing off on the application.
Okay, so initiated by one of the property owners doesn't mean supported only by one of the property
Correct.
Owners.
Correct.
He just happens to be the person who's done the work on it.
Yes, Mr. Joe Courtney owned a lot of the property. He's been selling off the pieces, and each of the owners have been part of, have been buying with understanding it's going to annex. They're all supported.
Okay, but I wanted to make sure there wasn't somebody lingering out there, and that's why this language was a little different than I've been seeing lately. Okay, thank you.
That's page two. Page three. Get into contracts and liquor license applications. Continued on page four. I have a conflict on 7E. Is that why it's off consent? Right. Vice Mayor.
Yeah, actually, on 7E, this is there was an open house last night, and this was a piece of what was going on. Beth. Was there, when I was there, there weren't very many people attending. Did there end up being more people who showed up? I admit I got there very early.
Yes, I don't, Mayor, Vice Mayor Walters, there weren't very many people that attended last night, but there are actually a couple of projects that are occurring in this area. This is one of them. We have a second project out for bid right now to drill a city well in that same area, and there'll be pretty much time together to kind of get in and get out.
That was my understanding, too. Do you want to take just a second and explain it so that...
Certainly. The project is on 6th Street, on Lewis, from 6th Street to University, and in kind of an aging neighborhood. We're going in to replace water, wastewater, and gas utilities. Some of the pipelines in that area date back to the late 30s. And we also, in that area, the sanitary sewer is kind of not there in parts, so really needs to be replaced in that area. We'll also be replacing the service connections to the houses in there. Our gas services staff have been in and walked up and down Lewis and talked to each of about, there's about 30 homes in that area. So that's the project that's on the agenda today. The second project we have out for bid is to drill a city well in that location, just down at the end of the street there on a corner property that we have. There's currently a well there. It's a redrill because that well is older and is failing. It's a pretty limited site, so we're looking at some ways to accommodate the drilling rig in there and minimize impact to the neighborhood. The meeting that you attended was to talk to the neighborhood about what will be coming in terms of construction.
And that well is an important well. I asked the question last night. They said the arsenic level there is like 0.3, I mean, which is really, really low.
It's important to us to get that well back in service before dry up.
And you're going to do these two projects basically simultaneously. Thank you. Thanks, Mayor.
That's page four, page five. Pardon?
Are you pulling 8B, Mayor? Or just because it's an introduction, are you letting it dry?
Is this another sign? Landmark
yes,
signs?
Yes, it is.
Go ahead,
thank you for calling that to my attention. Now. I'll let it go through for introduction.
Okay.
Introduction setting November 5th of 8A, B, and C. Page 6, resolutions are on for approval. Additional Resolutions on page 7. Vice Mayor.
I noticed that 9F is on consent. I hope that we'll either do something, or are we intending to do something at this point in time, Chris, at Monday night's meeting, or what are we going to do in terms of publicly thanking the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community? I mean, this is a significant contribution to help with the Mesa Grande ruins, and I want to make sure that they're getting the recognition that they deserve for helping us with this.
Yeah, Mayor, Vice Mayor, good question. We certainly are very appreciative of their role in helping us out on a couple of projects this year, and we, at their request, really, we're waiting until their public ceremony that's going to be in November 1st, I believe, where they'll be presenting ceremonial checks, I believe, to all the communities receiving the grant award. So we wanted to basically follow their lead and let them dictate exactly how this would be rolled out publicly. Okay. So that's kind of how we were proceeding, Vice Mayor.
Well, and I talked about the one that happens to be in my district, but we should also mention the Broadway Rec Center, which I know has been an issue on our plate for quite some time, and so it's really nice of them to step up on that one, too.
Absolutely. Thank you. Very appreciative.
This is accepting the grant applications that were submitted for three different projects: the Mesa Public Schools, $125,000 of pass-through grant for tutoring and student enrichment; Arizona Museum of Natural History, $150,000 to develop the Mesa Grande Cultural Park; and then the Mesa Parks and Recreation Commercial Facilities Grant, $150,000 for the air conditioning system at the Broadway Recreation Center, which this council's talked about several times. So we do appreciate them favorably concurring with these grant applications.
So, absolutely.
Right, good. Scott. All right. Okay, that's page 7 then. Page 8. These are ordinances. Continued over to page 9 and subdivision plat. Any questions on any of the items that we went over? All right. Let's go back to our study session agenda. Number 2, and this is here a presentation, discuss and provide direction on operational costs for the proposed public safety capital projects. Brian?
Just looking around for Chuck. Good morning, Mayor, Council. I'm going to lead you through a quick presentation, left some information at your desk this morning. Much of it is really information you've received previously, but we're trying now to consolidate and bring this all to a close on our public safety projects that we're looking at in relation to the bond election for next November. You've previously heard a discussion from Chief Beck and Chief Gascon about 16 capital projects that they are proposed to include as part of that bond election. Of those 16 projects, 12 of them have operations and maintenance costs. We've taken the summary of their information and provided it to you here on the first 5 pages of your slides. I won't repeat all the projects, but it will make note of 2 of them. The Arraignment Center, which is item number 6 on page 3, for $2.7 million. I should say that, first of all, the first-year O&M costs are right around $8 million for all these projects. The Arraignment Center accounts for approximately 35% of that amount. It's a significant project. This is the one that's going to be relocated to the basement of the current court facility as kind of the clearinghouse and arraignment center for the police department. The other one I would make note of is number 11, which is the construction of 3 new fire stations. As you know, we already have staffing for one of those fire stations with quality of life money, so we'll need to staff the other 2 new stations, and that's where the $3 million of first-year operational expense, or the majority of that cost, comes from, is the staffing of those 13 positions for each of those 2 stations, so 26 all told. That amount, $3 million, is approximately 39% of the total amount. I'm sorry. Yes,
Brian, going back to the Arraignment Center, the first full year O&M at almost 2.8, did that capture any potential savings by arraigning people that way instead of incurring the jailing costs, the costs of transportation to downtown, those kinds of things which we would have had to have had in our budget?
I guess we're taking the full conservative approach. This will be the full cost. We don't know what those savings would be at this time.
The answer is no.
Net out savings.
Or even the other side is a different side. Okay, thank you.
And you're right, Vice Mayor Walters. There probably are some savings, but we don't know what the escalating factor would be for jail costs in that time frame at all. So what we wanted to do is just anticipate the whole.
That's true, but we do know it will escalate.
We do know that.
We do know.
Mm-hmm. Pretty sure bet. As I said, on the fire stations and the 26 firefighting personnel that would go to those two stations under item 11, that accounts for about 39% of the $8 million of first-year operational costs. All told, between those two projects is nearly 75% of our operating costs. So again, just a quick summary, project by project. Again, four of the 16 do not require additional O&M. They're replacement or suppression props or things of that nature. What we did want to talk to you about is really how to fund these operational costs. We've talked to you about the concept previously and just wanted to formalize it a little bit more this morning. What you have before you on page 6 is a current graph of our current general obligation bond debt service schedule. We're currently paying about $27 million a year using general fund resources to do that. That'll stay flat until about 2013-2014, at which time it starts to drop. Excuse me. We do have a spike out in 2017-2018. Those bonds have all been refunded, and we would anticipate a current year refunding when we get to that point. We've recognized what that, or approximated what that refunding would look like with the blue dotted line that's on your presentation. Still the same amount of debt service, just spread over a different period of time to take that spike out of it. What that means to us is that the city of Mesa will anticipate expending $256.3 million of general fund resources between now and 2026-27 to pay for general obligation bond debt. This is really what makes Mesa different than every other major valley city. This requirement that's shown here in red is really paid for in every other major valley city, and I mean Chandler, Gilbert, Scottsdale, Tempe, Phoenix, Glendale are all paid for with a secondary property tax. So by us using our general our general fund resources, we're foregoing $256 million worth of other activities. Let me move along now to where the public safety projects and their O&M expenses lie. We've now added another line to the graph. You can see it starts in about 2010 and it increases dramatically as we ramp up and bring on the fire stations and the arraignment center and things of that nature to the approximate $8 million of first-year O&M expenses. Then it grows. We've just projected for projection purposes 3% thereafter out through the projection of this graph. What we would anticipate is utilizing the revenues that we currently use, offset the revenues that we're currently, our general fund resources, and utilize a secondary property tax for those, and utilize the general fund resources to pay these operational costs. That's exhibited in the blue area below the red line. That equates to about $137.7 million of the operational costs that we can cover that are related to these new bond projects between now and 2026-27.
I think our handout is in different order than what you're showing them up on the screen.
Hand collated it, and I'm sorry.
So there's a little bit of confusion on tracking which chart you're on. Or maybe it's just mine. And mine kind of jumps over a few
our
others. And
printers gets... were goofed up. I tried to do those by hand. I got the wrong one wrong. I'm sorry, Mayor.
All right. So we'll try to refer to what you're
okay.
Have up on the screen to make sure we're looking at the right one, because they are slightly out of order.
Okay.
All right.
So again, what we would anticipate doing is freeing up our general fund resources to pay this debt, or to pay these operational costs, approximately $8 million increasing, by utilizing secondary property tax revenues. Let me just talk about what we would do. Again, we would offset $8 million new public safety O&M costs with general fund resources. Those resources are currently being used to pay for debt service for previously issued bonds. How we would do this in relation to the bond election in November of 08, we would indicate the intention to make this replacement of the existing general fund resources with property tax revenues, and we'd make it part of the publicity pamphlet in the financial information section. We've talked to our bond attorneys. They say that is the appropriate place to make that statement and to show, if you can remember, a publicity pamphlet, there's a breakdown of how not only the new debt related to the projects, but old debt and how those relate to potential secondary property tax rates would break out. We would include it in there and include it in the narrative. There is, Council, you all know this, but just wanted to make sure we were aware, there is the option of offsetting that entire amount of the $256.3 million of our existing general fund burden for GO bond debt repayment through 26-27 with a secondary property tax. In addition to this $8 million in O&M costs, but there is that money available, and that's at council discretion. But just wanted to make sure you were aware of that option.
Of the $256 million, is that issued or was that authorized?
That's issued. That is current on the books.
Okay, and we also have some that's been authorized, but we haven't issued.
That is correct, Mayor. And we will be issuing a little bit more of that to finish up the Police Technical Services building as well as the City Court building.
Yes.
And some stormwater. But for the most part, what you see identified on the screen up here in red is and will be our future debt service line of authorized bonds.
And Mayor, if I could just put that in context. Today, the city's general fund allocates about 70% of the $330 million general fund budget to public safety. Mesa, under its chosen path of finance, which is, as I think Brian stated, is unique in that we do not have a dedicated revenue stream for debt service. Therefore, it is what happens is the dollars that otherwise would be used for general fund operations, including public safety, then are required to pay for debt service. And I guess my point is, if you take, you can see the chart up there, $256 million for any other city means that approximately $180 million of that $256 million would be dedicated to public safety under our current formula today. You take that $180 million and you stretch it over the 20 years or so that we've show kind of where at the point where the debt service is, assuming you don't issue any more debt, the existing debt service is paid off for. I mean, you can figure out that that's pretty significant. That's about $9 million annually that otherwise would be available for public safety. What we're suggesting to the council today, that's kind of the largest picture that could be assumed. But we are also reminding the council, and I think the council is very much aware of this, we cannot consider the issuance of new debt, whether it's for fire stations or arraignment centers, without consideration of the impact that will have on the operations. And so our conclusion is there's about $8 million needed for maintenance and operations under the currently proposed capital improvement plan that is before you today. And so the suggestion is, and the recommendation is, that in order to fund that O&M related to that new debt, is that in addition to the secondary property tax that would be placed, used to pay back the capital, the debt service, that also a portion would be included and considered for the maintenance and operation side. Now, that maintenance and operation side, Brian, I think we estimated just the $8 million.
Correct.
Over time is something less than just over six cents per thousand. Does that sound right?
Utilizing the state's methodology for laying out future assessed values, it would be applicable rate would be about 6 cents on average.
Okay. So I think what we're here today is to make sure council is
as we move forward in making decisions about the bond package, that in addition to whatever we decide the total capital program is, that the funding for the O&M also be considered in the total package. And this is how we would recommend that we address at this time.
I guess the other option that most cities are currently using, at least my understanding, would be that they would break out and have a primary property tax for the operation aspect, and then it's for the capital they could do a secondary. So,
and in effect, you're right. In effect, that's what we're suggesting, is stepping back and saying we should be paying all debt with secondary property tax, but we're not suggesting to do that today. We're saying we'll do at least a portion of the outstanding debt with a secondary property tax. All we're asking is that, what we're suggesting is paying for existing debt with a secondary property tax will then allow for those dollars then to be directed to the general fund. Otherwise, Mayor, as you know, in order to do the primary property tax, we would have to go specifically to a vote on that issue.
Correct. We did that once with the $30 million to basically have the way the financial model worked out. That's kind of what, or at least most of that, was needed long term. I think there's some discussion whether it all was. The straightforward way would be to have two different property tax questions, a primary and a secondary. What we're getting to is we're saying here are projects we want to do, and they also have ongoing operation and maintenance attached to them. We can do bonding for the primary construction, but how do you then staff the fire stations in place? And like you pointed out, that's the arraignment center and the fire stations take up the majority of that operations money. So you're letting people know if they're voting for it, they're also doing kind of a funding for the capital project and the operation and maintenance. Okay. I understand the reason for it, but I also understand that the direct way that would probably take place would be that people would vote for a property tax that would be a primary and a secondary, not just a secondary aspect of it. Secondary has a sunset, so your capital projects. Now that begs the question, what happens out on the out years when the operation and maintenance and the bonds are paid back and the still have the operation costs, so you've got a little bit of a blip out 15, 20 years.
I can give you a little bit of insight on that. If you look at that graph that Brian had up last, I believe it's number 9 in my packet, just so. If you look at 2021, that's when the O&M that's being added by this bond package starts to exceed what's available in existing debt service. So at that point, we would have to, and what we're analyzing in the forecast is how much in those out years do we have in growth in our revenues and being constricted on our expenditure side available to fund that. And that's what we're evaluating right now. We haven't finished the forecast at this time, but that's what we're looking at.
Okay, but let me take one more shot at this. If we're in 2007, 2008, call for the election, comes online, you're indicating 2010 is when they actually be built, so that you have the operation costs associated with them. I assume that's what the chart is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So then you've got 10, 11 years that you go 2010 to 2020. I assume there's got to be a layered effect then in 2000. Anticipating that? I don't remember ever going 10 years or that long, especially not 20 years, without having another bond package or something, because there's District 5 and 6 are going to continue to grow. So you're going to have to feed this in. So when would the, I know this is a crystal ball thing, but when do you expect the next secondary property tax
Mayor,
election to take
what
place?
I think we recommended to the council is that we would look at doing every 5 years.
Okay.
I think we want to, I'm sure
every
we need
4 years, on
four
the
years
on
the
electric.
First one because of the timing of the election, but the idea is to try to do like a 5-year CIP. and have that occur every time. The challenge will always be, you know, how if you add projects that are going to require additional O&M, where are you going to get the funding for that? You're right. But as far as the capital side, the assumption would be that you would actually have a specific fund that would have a secondary property tax that would be offsetting the debt service completely. And so that one, that would be addressed all on its own. The only issue that remains in the subsequent bonds, we won't have the same available existing debt to pay for O&M in after this next bond election. Okay. So that will be a challenge for, you know, 5-6 years from now.
All right. And the next question is calling the election. If we agree with the bond package, the dollar amount, and we agree with the way to fund it, this council can call the election, but there's a time period after June 2nd when a lot of us go out of office that the new council takes over. They have the option of either rescinding that or continuing to have that on their ballot on the time frame. So even though we would call it, they still have an opportunity. And I'm thinking about a mayor candidate or somebody saying, I'm not raising taxes, I'm going to live with what we've got, or they support this and know that it's a necessary ingredient to have the city, you know, remain viable. Is that option, time-wise, is still available, is my understanding. Is that correct?
Mayor, it's my understanding they have till July, I forget the specific, July. First week in July or something like that.
Okay.
That's when that's the last date it can be called. So I guess they could take an action in June.
Yes,
to rescind
Mayor.
It, I guess.
I think they can, if that's what the council chooses to do at that time.
All right. It just, in your comment about every mayoral election every 4 years, it would be a bond election. Part of that's really good because whoever's running for office then has to either defend that we need these public safety projects or live with whatever choice they make throughout that 4 years. Whether they have the concurrence of council or not is another issue too. But, so I like the pattern. I'm not sure that I like the idea of one council setting it and then another council having to live with what was set. So you might want to tweak that time frame a little bit when you do it. But.
Mayor, and I'm sorry, Councilmember Rawls. I mean, that was typically or previously our normal process was mayoral cycles because that was a citywide election. Oh. And then it worked very well with, you know, March and June elections in that time frame also. With the election starting to get moved to November, things do change a little bit. So the next election would be, we would anticipate November of 12. Just add a couple more real quick items here for consideration. One is, I don't know if I mentioned it, we didn't include streets in here. There's no streets O&M it would be necessary to use this type of scenario. Streets is taking care of the 0.3% sales tax increase and their operations and maintenance costs that was approved on the ballot. Also, if you remember, and Chuck spoke about our forecast, is we have a current level of service forecast. Our current forecast could not absorb an $8 million increase in O&M expenses, and that's why this proposal is here with you today in this discussion and the way we've gone with this. Okay. And while we do have full coverage to 2021-22, using this methodology with this election, as Chuck said, we'll have to rely on our forecast from 22 on out to see what kind of differential we'll need to make up. I'm sorry, Councilmember Rawls.
Okay. One more. What's the mill levy to do the proposals that have been submitted so far?
Mayor, this is just current estimates based on, you know, estimated debt service and schedules and selling and everything of approximately, again, utilizing the state's projected assessed valuation formula that they require us to use, approximately 30 cents.
Okay. Is that on about $4 billion, or what's your total?
It's on about $400 million of new general obligation bonds.
Okay, but what's the assessed value that you're working on?
The assessed value, well, again, it starts out at about 5.1 in 9-10, and it increases to approximately $12 billion in 32-33.
Okay, all right.
And just quickly, Mayor, before we leave that number, just to be clear, Brian, that number you just gave is only for the new debt service.
Correct. Just for
you
the
did not include
million.
The new debt service plus, because I want to be real clear that it's not our recommendation to do a bond election without a way to pay for the O&M. So when you combine the two, then, Brian, what would that be?
Approximately 36 cents.
Okay. I think that's the number I guess I want to get everybody comfortable with, because I think you can't separate the two.
And, again, that is the 20-year average for that time frame. Or 24-year average, I should say.
Let me make a couple of comments before I get to my questions. The first comment is, and I've said this repeatedly, is that secondary property tax, to have a dedicated funding source for the repayment of capital projects in a growing city, is in my mind government 101. I mean, it's the reason we have the pressures that we feel now is because hundreds of billions of dollars of bonds were issued with no dedicated repayment source. So again, I want to put that out there as sort of the general principle, and it also carries over to what my position will be if we issue additional capital projects through the bond election that we're contemplating in November. I do want to make it clear, though, that I don't believe I know this is not what you guys are doing, but at least people might misinterpret what you're suggesting here, is we're not going to use general obligation bonds to pay operation and maintenance cost. What we're going to do is we're going to issue potentially, you're recommending that we impose a secondary property tax to cover a portion of the existing bond debt, freeing up $8 million in other general revenue dollars that we can use for the operation and maintenance.
Right.
Yeah. Money is fungible, but the necessity of not using general obligation bonds to pay operation and maintenance is overriding. All we're doing is shifting, but it's perfectly legal to do so. Those are my two general comments. Now, I have a question. As I look at the slide before the one that was up there, the only reason I do that is because it's the blue makes it harder to that one there. It looks like in 13-14, or 14-15, it's not sure, the existing debt general obligation drops from $27 million down to $18 or $19 million. Okay. There's $9 million. So some people might look at this and say, we really only have a shortfall for the first 3 years of this program, but I'm going to let Chuck explain where that $8 or $9 million is already programmed into our forecast.
And that's exactly, you've got it exactly right. Through 24-25, all of our forecasts to this point have included this drop in that GO debt.
We have already anticipated spending that $8 or $9 million somewhere else.
On the current level of staffing.
Keeping things where they are.
Exactly where they are.
Again, when that drop jumps out at you, it actually almost matches the O&M need. And again, when you look at it initially, you say, gee, what's the problem? But again, our forecast has already projected the expenditure of that money to maintain our current level of service.
That is correct.
And I'm not sure that Debbie or anybody else is going to be able to answer this question, so we may have to have Fred here before this one. I'm concerned that if we put into the ballot language in 2008 that we're going to pay for the O&M of these new projects by imposing a secondary property tax for $8 million of existing general fund obligation debt, and that is then approved by the voters, is that part of the promises made that the council cannot retreat from, that the council can't change? Are we obligating not only, because we're not going to impose it in 09, 010, or 010-11, it's the next council that's going to have to. Are we tying their hands legally by including that in the information that goes out in the bond package, ballot language, et cetera? And I know Mr. Rosenfeld has been in here before to say, you can't do that. You said this and you can't back off. Mm-hmm. So I need to know whether this falls into that category.
Mayor Hawker, Councilmember Rawls, first, the clarification is it would not be included in the ballot question. You could not ask that allowance again. because that authorization has already been given.
No,
to
I understand that, but we're explaining what right. we're going to do.
Right, and that's where we would include it in. This is a Chandler publicity pamphlet,
right, in the publicity.
But it would be included as part of the financial discussion section. Again, most, even our old previous bond elections have had a financial discussion session
right.
that would say, here's what a rate would be if we decided to levy it. So I would still think that would be at the council's option to always levy that rate if they so chose. We would expect, in order for our finances to work, we would require that, but it would still be an option of the council.
You agree, Debbie?
Councilmember Rawls, yes, I would agree with that. The only issue is once you do issue the bonds, we have a legal obligation to obviously pay them back, and that may require a secondary property tax at some point down the road if the city of Mesa couldn't use the general funds. But it doesn't require the secondary property tax.
Yes, but what I'm concerned about is if during the election debate over the bonds in 2008, part of what we're presenting is it is council's intent to impose a secondary property tax that's equivalent to $8 million to help pay for previously existing debt, and the voters approve it, are we then compelled to impose that secondary property tax to cover that $8 million?
No, in my opinion, no.
Okay. I'd like to hear that from Fred, either in writing or in person, because I'm concerned about tying the hands of future councils. And that's my biggest concern about what's being proposed here today, is the idea that there are other concerns, but the idea that we are going to, because this is not going to occur until 09, 10, or
correct.
10, 11. I can't tell from the chart.
Those 2 years. That's when it starts ramping in.
Right. And so, the next council may come in and say, we think that there's more room for cuts, that we think there's more other ways we can do it with more court fees, we can do it with higher parking fees, whatever the scenario is, and I just don't want to be in a position of having made a decision that has these kinds of long-term ramifications when we're not going to be the ones doing it.
I'll confirm that with bond council.
Thank you.
From a timing standpoint, if this council calls the election, does it have to be ratified or just the new council has the option of weighing in because they have a month that they'll be in office. It's an awful steep learning curve, but I'm not sure which council is really doing it. I think I like the idea from the information we have suggesting that this is what we'd do and call the election, but I think it can be overturned by the other council because they would be seated.
Well, Mayor, let me just quickly weigh in. I think every time you've issued bonds, you've had to disclose to the voters the impact of a secondary property tax on those bonds. Now, what I think this is the way the answer will come back to Councilman Rawls is, but at the same time, the council obviously took the alternative not to issue the secondary property tax and to use other ways to finance the debt. So I don't, the point being is that this council can call the election and it can go to the voters. Voters can approve it. But a future council then has to, they will be the ones making the decision and actually approving whatever the rate is based upon the latest information that will be provided by the county at that time and based upon us working with bond council and financial advisors of how we structured the debt and the payments and when things are going to get paid for, what the prevailing rates are and things like that.
That's interesting too. Tom?
I agree with that, Chris, and right now, the council has had and always had each year the freedom to impose a secondary property tax to cover existing general obligation bonds because that language was in the ballot language before. I understand that. What I'm concerned about is that we somehow, through what's being suggested, and I don't know that we would, and I think it was probably ways of protecting against it, I just don't want to have the freedom that this council has to impose or not impose a secondary property tax to cover existing general obligation bonds to be taken away from future councils because of something that we say in the publicity pamphlet or something that we say in the ballot language or whatever. That's my concern. The second concern is I'm not entirely sure that a month is really fair play.
Oh, I agree with that.
in terms of requiring a new council to make that kind of fundamental decision. So, but I understand they have that right, but I'm not sure that it's a real right in given the learning curve.
Vice Mayor.
But they have another right, and that is to never issue the bonds. Authorization for the bonds does not require issuance of the bonds. So even, I mean, they could support, say to people, I support your passing these bonds so that we have the ability to use them down the road if I figure out some other way because I don't agree with this or, you know, whatever that happens to be. This council has made it perfectly clear that we have no intention of asking the voters to do it without attaching a secondary property tax to it for the very reasons that you talked about earlier, Tom. You know, it's government 101. It's what should have happened long before now. But even if they come in and support the passage of the bonds, that does not require them to issue them. Whatever council is sitting there has to vote, and then they have to vote to set the rate and approve the projects and do all of those things. So there are a lot of checkpoints along the way. This is not the only one. I think your point was, though, that you don't want something in the language to tie everybody else to that, and it's a good point. But it won't be on the ballot itself.
Correct.
And the controlling thing usually is the ballot, but I agree with you. Let's find out from Fred. Yeah. May I ask another different question, and it goes to a term that Tom keeps using and you have concurred with. You've used the phrase current level of service. Current level of service or current level of staffing?
Staffing.
Yeah, let's make the distinction between the two, because current level of service implies that as the city grows, we'll be able to provide the same level of service as we have today. That's not what it is. It's current level of staffing we're talking about. So as the city grows, we aren't growing the staff here. The other point on that is if you look at the public safety needs and I just lost my train of thought. It just walked out the door. Okay, Keno, it'll come back in a minute. So turn to somebody else for a second, and I'll raise my hand again.
All right. Scott, quick.
The mayor, the vice mayor hits it right on the head. We shifted that last year, and I'm sorry if I misspoke. It is current level of staffing, because as we move to a city with 100,000 more folks, we cannot anticipate that our response times will be the same and things of that nature, and people's expectations for that will remain the same. So, we'll be able to respond. So it is that staff responding in a much bigger community.
Okay. We had outlined earlier a time frame would like to, now that we have, I think, a concept here on how to do the O&M aspect of the facilities. We'd also talked about total dollar amounts, but we've really not had the discussion amongst ourselves yet as far as debating those dollar amounts in different departments. When does that come forward? And I would like to get the information that we need in order to make the decision to call that, to put a bond election on the next ballot so that any council candidates or mayor candidates that are running for the city council have that as their one of their questions, whether they support or not, and if they don't support, what alternatives do they have. So the sooner, in my opinion, that can be wrapped up,
sure,
I think the better. I'm not sure if we need additional information outside of what's come in and then having a different discussion, so I'd say let's get with that.
Okay, and Mayor, and that, thank you very much for that question. I think what we want to hear from council is what we've presented to you, all the projects. I think the one project that we still needed to return to council about was the possibility of the, if we looked at the Williams Freeway inclusion in this. But after that, I think we're looking, and maybe we can have another follow-up study session, and maybe the council could want to look and be prepared to ask us questions. We're kind of now at a point where we are looking to the council to say, what is it you want more information about? What is it that you have some concerns about? Do you want to do the entire amount of projects that we've proposed to you? Are there some that we haven't included that you think we should consider? Are there others that you think maybe should be maybe postponed until the next cycle? But that's kind of where we're at. We really are looking at some point here pretty quickly, Mayor, is just an opportunity for council to kind of weigh in and give us feedback. I think there was another question about how much time what way should we maybe go out publicly and maybe have a public opportunity to weigh in on the projects and what those will be, and maybe there's some others out there that we weren't made aware of, and then quickly, then Mayor, yes, I agree, then have the council have an opportunity to make a decision about calling the election.
Okay. You're referring to the Gateway Freeway and acceleration potential?
Correct? Yes, Mayor. That was part of a, I think that was one of the discussions we had when we talked about that package that came up from council.
Kind of simultaneous with that discussion on the Gateway acceleration, you know, make sure we have enough match for the 30% on all of those projects. I know that 3/10 helps, but I'm not sure it gets us there with the cost inflators that are hitting it with construction costs. But there's also a statewide look at transportation needs, and it might be that we piggyback in on that statewide and put the Gateway acceleration, some of those projects, into that election if that comes to fruition. So several moving parts right now, but I think we can get to some pretty good discussions on the dollar magnitude, what the mill levy will be, and the different projects, I think sooner rather than later at this point. I think we've appreciate the presentations by the staffs, and I think the needs are pretty overwhelming, that the projects that were listed, at least in my opinion, they need to be put on the ballot. And as the vice mayor has mentioned, future council can decide whether they issue the bonds to actually build those projects, but I think that needs to be in the repertoire of whoever's going to be running the city.
And so Mayor, once you figure up those projects, we can then come back to you with the firm financial numbers and the mill levies and everything else related to those specifically, right, or at least our best estimates of those.
And I think we need to engage in that conversation. Then I think also the conversation of taking out the community to make sure that there's community buy-in. And I'd also like to see a chart of where all that is spread out across the city, whether there is something in it for each of the districts and neighborhoods so that their public safety is enhanced by voting for this type of an election. We go on down. Mike?
With some questions on the 2.7 on the Arraignment Center O&M. I don't have to necessarily have them today. It seems like a lot. And I guess the question would be, what type of reduction do we have from the court's budget if they're not going to have a custody court? And how are we going to spend the 2.7. I understand the capital costs, but I didn't know that there would be that much additional personnel cost in funding that center. But I'd be waiting to see what you've got.
I was looking around for somebody from the police department, but I can break it down for you if you'd like. There's about $1.4 million in additional personnel, and that's two shift supervisors for detention, four detention officers, and 10 transport officers to the jail. And then we also have some prosecutor staffing, and then we have the maintenance of the building of about 1.3, the cleanup, landscape, that normal operation of the facility, and that's it in total.
Is there a judge and court staff in there also? Or is
I believe
that transferred?
That is yet to be defined, along with the prosecutorial staff.
Okay. Mayor, Councilman, I think you've asked a question that we need to come back with the whole package and talk about how it would work, what we see we've talked generally about the benefits, that maybe we could bring back and drill down that into that a little bit more and bring that to council and break this out, talk about the possible impact of increase. I mean, it's not only, it is trying to, there is hopefully some savings maybe in jail costs, but I think the other thing that we've really tried to emphasize, and you heard from the chief, was it last Thursday? No, Monday, the last council meeting study session we had with ICE about the idea of really, there are many of the individuals that are being apprehended but maybe aren't being completely processed thoroughly, and so this is a capacity issue to do that. So let's bring back that whole package to talk about the benefits overall and how this $2.7 million relates to that.
If you want to bring it back to the Public Safety Committee first, that'd be fine also to vet it through there.
Okay,
or bring
and I think
it back
we have a committee meeting coming up soon, so maybe that will work. We'll see what we can do.
I think everybody wants to make sure that's the net number, that the saving that we are going to be processing more people that we're currently releasing, so that does increase your, there's not the savings that we anticipated with the same level by not doing the transports and stuff over the county.
Okay.
Kyle?
I want to reaffirm a point that was already made, in that whenever we make a presentation so that the public understands, it is not a level of service, but the level of staffing, because those who disseminate that information need to make sure it's understood that the level of service does not equate the level of staffing. And people can very easily misunderstand that. And I think it's important that all staff, whenever they're talking to media, making presentations to public, that they really clarify that there is a difference there, that we need to make sure we don't slip up and say that, because it's very easily misunderstood. And the current level of staffing is drastically going to be different 5 years down the road when the needs are there and we don't have the people to do it. So they're going to see a level of service change unless something else happens.
Tom.
A couple of other points. Number one, on the netting out the numbers and things, I think it's better to probably, particularly if it's not binding, to go with the higher numbers so that we can be in the position of underpromising and overperforming. If we end up with we only need $6 million 3 years down the road, I'd rather be in that position than to say, well, gee, we need 10. So I don't mind. I'd like to have the numbers, Mike, and be able to net it out, but I wouldn't mind fudging on the high side so that we're on the right side of the circumstances breaking our way coin. Mayor, this is on the agenda for direction today. I have to tell you that I'm not prepared to give direction until I get some more information from Mr. Rosenfeld. And I'm also need to digest the concepts, because there are two additional things at play here that we haven't discussed yet. One is, even though we have the legal authority and have had since each bond was authorized by the voters, those bonds were presented to the voters with the concept that we will not be imposing a secondary property tax, and not a legally binding promise, but one that was sort of in the scenario. So I need to think through, and I think all of us do, because we've talked about it before, think through the consequences of that. And secondly, and it's kind of ironic that it's on the agenda with the same time with the next thing, what we're basically talking about here is up to an $8 million tax increase. At the same time, we're talking about spending $6 million on roads pool, and we authorized $7 million or $6 million for Keno the last meeting, and we're talking about going to perhaps, you know, $8 million for new east side pool. There's another way of doing this, and that is, if you really believe that public safety is the highest priority and we need this money for public safety, if you don't have the money for public safety, but you're saying that's your highest priority and you're doing anything else, then you're really not walking the talk. You're saying it's your highest priority, but you're not. So we need to look at least I need to think through, okay, are there cuts? Do we want to look at cuts? Is there another way to build this this model? So again, I'm just asking for time on the direction side. I think that's probably the consensus here, is that we don't want to make a decision right now, but at least I can't. And if I'm forced to, I'd have to vote no.
Well, I don't think the whole package is before us today, right. So couldn't do it anyway. Yeah. Vice Mayor.
Okay, a couple of things. Let me respond to that first. Money for the pools is coming out of the Quality of Life Capital Fund, and voters voted for a Quality of Life package back in 1998. It included pools in there. It's a very difficult thing to then turn around and say, yeah, but we know you voted for it, but we're going to change everything you voted for. For me, it plays back into that whole concept of the first piece that you talked about, which is, you know, what was your intent when you were doing it? What were you trying to do? And you have those one-time expenses of the capital and quality of life, and versus, you know, the ongoing year in and year out bond package. So I did remember what I had said. I actually wrote a note to myself, but I was on the wrong page, which was the public safety indebtedness. If you look at what we have, one of the issues for me is going to be whether or not the things that you are looking at paying off with secondary property tax that are currently being paid for with general funds would be whether or not those were the same kinds of things that are being authorized in this vote. In other words, if you're paying off, I know it seems like a distinction without a difference, but it is a distinction for me, and that is that people will be voting on police, fire, public safety things, and I think that it should tie, if we're going to also repay some other things, I think it should be in that same realm, police, fire, public safety. I'm not comfortable with then turning around and saying, oh, and we're paying off the parks bonds too, even though that wasn't something you were voting on right now. For me, it all has to be part of the same piece, and people need to know what it's tied to. The next piece is, and I do need more time, so you're right, Tom, I wouldn't be ready to vote on it today either. I need to know that number that you're talking about here, the 30 cents, the 36 cents. Is that your first number, or is that your ramped up number?
That in terms of the levy amount, would be an average over the period. And that's the way it's presented in the publicity pamphlet. Here is the average for the 24-year period that would be there. So there'd be higher months, higher years and lower years.
And what does that equate to on an average home?
So, again, putting it into perspective, of the 36 cents currently on a $250,000 home with a full cash assessed value of $250,000, that would be $91 a year.
Okay. And were we using $200,000 last time?
I think we've used the $100,000 amount so people can figure it in a factor. The state also requires us now to use, when we do $250,000 on the residential side, as well as $2.5 million on the commercial industrial side.
And what about as people get new property tax valuation, which we just got, and doggone it, our home just went up in value, and we didn't do anything. But next year, as we're actually seeing property values go down, when people get their assessment, will it show a decrease? I can say that word. Will it show a decrease in their assessed valuation?
Well, the one thing that secondary property tax does, it follows what your debt service is. You cannot over-collect on debt service, so it will follow up and down based on what the assessed value is.
And I understand that concept, but I also understand the concept of people looking at that thing and saying, my assessed valuation just went up. I'm not talking about the reality, which is correct. You can only collect as much as you owe in that year. But what happens, I'm asking the more broad question about what happens with assessed valuations as we're seeing property values
and
declining.
That's probably a question to go to the county assessor, who would set those values rather than us, on how fast they're going to respond to market fluctuations in the values of homes. I do not know, Vice Mayor.
Okay. Well, I might make that phone call. I have one other thing that goes back to the in custody, arraignment center, and that is that we might not be able to fully capture this for another reason. The chief said right now we are doing what we call catch and release. You know, somebody shoplifting, somebody's, you know, we write them a ticket in essence and say appear in court on this particular day. He said we don't know who those people are a lot of times. You know, we might have false identity. We don't know. When you do this arraignment center, you might end up finding out you have some additional people that you actually want to incarcerate. Right. That we have not been incarcerating.
Right.
So we may actually end up with
more. Yeah.
Right. And as our friends at ICE told us, we might end up with some people that they're very interested in getting as well. So, you know, it's that cooperative thing. And I understand that we are then responsible for the cost of transporting them and the officer to take them and all of those things, at least if I understood his report last week. But that's something that we want to have happen because we want people who are committing crimes off of our streets. So thank you, Mayor.
Mike.
Claudia makes a point that I agree with, and that's if we could go back and look at the public safety projects that we're still paying for, and that comes to mind, that's the court, probably the Red Mountain substation, definitely the tech services building. Of the three most recent, I'm sure there are others that would be within the scope, and get a dollar amount for those. Costs of those particular projects, so therefore we could, if we're going to go recapture previous projects, it's easy to explain. And then, you know, along those same lines, I read somewhere the other day where the sheriff's average cost throughout the system is $16.50 per day per prisoner, and we're paying 90 something. So it's just a thought-provoking situation.
Mayor, I do have just a quick number, and maybe answers Councilmember Whalen's and Vice Mayor Walter's question. We do have our general obligation broke out, and I can provide you with this for fire and public safety between, for this current fiscal year through 26-27, it's approximately $150 million of remaining principal and interest for currently sold bonds that are out there currently sold.
Brian,
That's 150 million out of the 256 or whatever.
Approximately, right.
So more than half.
Looking at the large financial picture, the one that's always been troubling was some of the new Gatsby regulations as far as unfunded retirement liabilities for medical and retirement. And I know that, and I'm not sure when those numbers are going to be released, some cities have. Where is Mesa in that as far as the numbers? I know the public safety and some of those kind of have their own funds, so I assume that we're okay with that, but is there any dollar magnitude that...
Mayor, we have we've disclosed those numbers as early as a year ago, I think, or to the rating agencies. It's an interesting dialogue going in out in the world of Gatsby because there is quite a bit of pushback now from a lot of cities because not knowing there has been no direction or feedback on how to scale those numbers and what does it mean for one city versus another city. Some cities have gone so far as to issue debt to cover that gap. Many other cities have suggested that it is inappropriate for Gatsby to be putting those requirements out there and have reported them, but there has been no direction from S&P or Moody's about what that number, how to value that number in the context of a rating or what a city should do with that number. We have the number. I think we've brought it to council once, we can bring it again. But at this point, even those who have done the study, forget the name of the company who did it for us, but...
Siegel.
Even after they did it, who are in the business of doing those studies, we asked the question, so what would you do with this number? And right now there really isn't clear response. We will continue to disclose that number as required by Gatsby, but at this point... I'm not sure to tell you what we can do. I think more for us right now, it does help us to evaluate each year in the budget, you know, how much we're allocating towards funding those projects and watching that number. I think it's important to kind of benchmark that number over time to see if it's growing or decreasing and what we can do to better fund or watch those costs, I guess, those accrued costs that are out into the future and make sure that they don't become considerable for the city. But right now, I don't know, and Chuck, maybe you've heard anything, there's just not any direction. I've actually seen more articles now actually criticizing Gatsby for having put that out there without any kind of explanation of what to do with the figures. So.
Right. I think the nuance that we covered in the Finance Committee of National League of Cities had to do with the retired individuals that were getting the option to buy medical through the municipality, but they had to pay the full cost of that medical. But because they were in a different category and had probably more susceptible at 50, 60, 70 years old to having more claims per capita, they were not, whether there was really a Gatsby, a finance obligation for future retirees on medical. I mean, talk about a tough one to ever calculate, but that's the nuances that they're going through, and I just wanted to make sure that there wasn't some huge unfunded liabilities that we knew about that haven't been discussed.
It's been discussed, but what's going to happen to it, we're unsure about yet. I mean, that's exactly, it's an unsure position.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions on this item? All right, let's then... we'll look forward to bringing it back more as a package, and I think the public safety sounds like wants to look at the arraignment center in more detail too. Hear a presentation, discuss and provide direction on issues related to the reconstruction of Rhodes Pool. Tom, you want a wave slide, a water slide? What do you want over there at Rhodes? Pass. All right.
Good morning, Mayor, Council members. I have with me Darla Armsfield, who is...
Before you go, last time there was the issue of whether or not I had a conflict of interest on this. Ms. Spinner called me yesterday. Debbie, you want to clear this up, please?
Yes, Mayor, Vice Mayor. I don't believe you have a conflict under the state statutes. This is a neighborhood pool, and I don't believe it's in direct competition with
I just want to make that clear before I enter into the discussion. Thank you.
Great, thank you. As I mentioned, I have with me Darla Armsfield, who is our aquatic supervisor here with me today. We are here requesting direction on the recreational amenities to be included in the renovation of Rhodes Pool. As you recall, on the 27th of last month, Council directed us to proceed with Keno and Rhodes design and renovation. However, we were to come back and talk about the amenities of Rhodes Pool, as well as cost estimates, as well as the additional attendance, or provide the additional attendance history that of both Carson's and Rhodes. Before we discuss the amenities options at Rhodes, we'd like to share with you some brief research that we have conducted related to this topic and project. First, our research suggests that lifestyle sports have grown in popularity. These lifestyle sports are sports such as surfing, snowboarding, wakeboarding, windsurfing, skateboarding, etc., have seen participation increases from 30% to up to 90% in the past decade. When we talk about lifestyle sports, they're called such because those individuals that participate in these sports live that lifestyle, from the clothes that they wear to the music that they listen to the cars they drive and so forth. Industry trends are showing us that our citizens want close to home recreation rather than travel to amenities. They're an instant generation. Parents are looking for safe, active recreation amenities in a controlled environment. They want destinations with amenities for all family members, not just a particular age group. They want a shift from static to dynamic amenities that encourage physical participation and skill development. When we talk about static and dynamic amenities, static is something that you can do over and over again and it's unchanging, whereas dynamic amenities are progressive. They're lively and they're active, and they can build a skill and continue to progress with that particular amenity or feature. We've provided in your packet the attendance figures going back to 2003 of both Carson's and Rhodes public swim attendance. It's important to note that these figures are simply public swim. They do not represent any lessons or other programs that took place at that pool. As we look towards the future of Rhodes, we took into consideration the service circles, and when we look at both the status of Powell Junior High as well as Mesa Junior High and their deteriorating conditions, we suspect that once Rhodes would be renovated, that we would be able to help those areas such as Powell and Mesa Junior have a pool close to their neighborhoods that they would be able to enjoy. Aquatic staff is confident that the Rhodes will rival Carson in its attendance after construction.
Looking at the 03 and 04 numbers, though, there was already a fairly large discrepancy between Carson and Rhodes. Why would you anticipate Rhodes jumping up to the same level as Carson after the amenities?
And Mayor and Councilmember Rawls, as I mentioned, when we look at the service circles, and I apologize for not having it on the Elmo, but we're anticipating that the attendance at Powell and Mesa Junior will continue to decline, and as those participants of those pools do decline, they will be looking for another opportunity, which we believe will be Rhodes, depending on the amenities that we place in there. So I think that the amenities are imperative to drawing that crowd from those other two pools into Rhodes.
So they'll be traveling to rather than close to home, which is contrary to one of the trends that you've identified.
Well, and when we look at those trends, and I can clarify that, close to home recreation means that close to home in the sense of they would rather be in the area in which they live, not necessarily traveling to California or to Oregon or to wherever to recreate. They want to be able to have fast recreation at their fingertips kind of after dinner or before dinner type of thing.
So they could travel to Carson.
Right.
They do.
And do. There seemed to be a substantial difference between Carson and Rhodes in 2003 and 2004 in terms of their attendance.
And Mayor and Councilman Rawls, I think the challenge we had this conversation about the pools, is that the school district would like Rhodes to be the pool for, is it Dobson High School? Practice.
Correct.
Versus today, it's Powell. Where does it go? Today's Powell.
Yes.
And the dilemma is then, if we spend the money only for roads for practice facilities, it really does, and you're right, we're trying to make an assumption here, but if we just do the improvements for the practice, for the school purposes only, then it will have very little function after, during the summer months, which in the time we actually operated, which is really when the city, I think, suggests, you know, here, that's our part of the partnership. And so I think the concern is, what do we bring into that construction, adding an amenity to do that? And I think that was the point, is we're going to do roads, then we need to do an amenity. Without the amenity, we wouldn't be recommending doing roads at all.
And I wouldn't, under any circumstances, vote to renovate roads without amenities.
Okay.
What I'm trying to suggest, though, is I don't believe you can reasonably anticipate, that roads will experience the same kind of, you might get a triple growth from 15 to 45 at Carson, but a triple growth at roads is going to take you from 4 to 12.
Darla, how did Carson compare to roads back in 2003 as far as the size of the pool and all that? Was it
basically what you're experiencing, if I can address Mayor Hawker and Councilman Rawls, is that Carson is located in a neighborhood area. It doesn't have any, it does, if you go to Carson, you'll see that it's surrounded is by lots and lots of homes. And typically those homes may or may not have pools, but typically they do not. When you look at where Rhodes is located, it is in a less neighborhood-oriented area. So it has Dobson Ranch right next to it. As you know, Dobson Ranch has three of their own pools,
right,
and a lot of backyard pools. So they're in different niches. So what we've done with Rhodes' programming and why it's different is we do a lot of specialized travel-to programming there, where people will get in their car and drive to it. And that's why we've chosen some of the amenities that we have, is they are travel-to amenities. People will get in their car and go drive to it. The neighborhood of Carson, fortunately, even though it declined in and started deteriorating and falling apart, we were able to keep a stable base. We saw roads drop faster, mainly because it wasn't advantageous for people to, it wasn't as much of a draw for people to get in their car and drive to roads. They would drive to another destination. Does that make sense?
I sort of hear what you're hearing, but I guess what I have to look at is roads has, Carson had this level of service, and roads had this level of service. Okay, Carson jumped up three times once we put the amenities in. Can we expect more than a three times jump in the attendance at roads? If not, do we want to spend $6 million to get 12 people an hour? That's all I'm asking. Do we have a reasonable basis to believe that the roads number, and forget the 3.5 in 2007, just look at the average, which is roughly 4.2, do we have a reasonable basis to believe that installation of the amenities will increase Rhodes' attendance past 4.2 times 3, which is what Carson did? Is it going to get to 25 or 30 or 35? If you believe that, what makes you believe that? Because frankly, I'm not interested in spending $6 million to get to 12.
Mayor and Councilmember Rawls.
Which is a threefold increase, which is the same percentage increase that Carson had.
Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, to answer that question, it's the reason for we're here, depending on the amenity. That's the answer. We firmly believe, and you'll see in our recommendation, that if we do not put a unique amenity there, you're absolutely right. And the decision would be then not to proceed.
I'm sorry, Brett. I'm assuming the amenity.
Okay.
I'm assuming that one of these amenities, whether it's the standing wave or it's the lazy river or it's the flume and slide, assume that's in there. Because I'm assuming you put something like that in Carson.
We did. We put a slide and basically a static slide at Carson. But our recommendation is to move with the standing wave feature. So when we do look at those amenities, slide, lazy river, as we'll discuss here in a moment, that if we choose one of those amenities, then more than likely the attendance will not springboard up to past Carson. Whereas if we choose a unique amenity such as a standing wave machine flow rider, then that will not only draw from the general area, it will be similar to almost, I don't want to say a regional pool, but it will have a regional draw because it is the only attraction that we offer in the entire city of Mesa. So we will be pulling people throughout the entire city simply to go to Rhodes.
So you're expecting a more than threefold increase because of this special amenity?
And if we do not have that special amenity, we do not anticipate
that. That's not an option. I think we all agree that that's not an option.
But Councilman Rawls, you're making a very good point that we are not basing this on real scientific data.
Right.
There's no doubt about that. So if we wanted to be a sure thing, you know, we would probably go to a pool like Taylor, where you could say, okay, we already have a fairly good attendance there. I mean, if you're only going to look at this, and I understand the point, but if you're only going to look at this on a, you know, what we know today, visitors per hour, then something like a Taylor, which is already beginning to experience some amount of deterioration, we could go and put the $6 million there, and you could have that difference. But it's a tough call because there is a risk that you could do this, and you don't get. I don't want to be saying we are absolutely positively.
I'm not. I would never expect that kind of guarantee from a staff. I just wanted to understand what the basis was, because the numbers here don't, on their face, suggest that we're going to get an increase, but it doesn't suggest to me that we're going to get a large enough increase. Now, what you said is that there's going to be a special amenity. If that special amenity is the only one in the city, the only one clearly in the west half of the city, you're going to get more people who are willing to drive to that amenity, to participate in it, not holding you to it, no guarantees. It's a bit of a Field of Dreams thing. I mean, it is.
Yeah, it is.
But I don't think it's a question of location. It's a question of what can we reasonably expect from that area. And you're suggesting that we're going to be appealing beyond the normal Rhodes neighborhood.
Right.
Okay.
And that leads us to our programming of objectives, which is the very first one, Councilmember Rawls, is to simply increase attendance, bottom line. We're looking at providing a larger service area with dynamic interactive play features that we do not offer in other areas of the city. We want to expand the teen skill development as well as some of our traditional programming efforts, which are to teach swimming lessons to all ages and contribute to drowning prevention. But then we also want to look at expanding aquatic programming, going after that target teen market throughout the entire city. Want to bring families together for affordable, fun, and exciting recreation, and also meet the Mesa Public Schools' educational and competitive needs for this particular area. So now to talk about the amenities, we've brought forth four amenities. We've kind of started to talk about one of them, the standing wave feature, but the other three that we would like to present for consideration would be the splash pad, the lazy river, the flume, or a speed slide. And I will go ahead and walk through some of the pros and the cons and the various specifications of each one of these features. The splash pad is something that obviously caters to the 1 to 12-year-old population. You can see several pictures here of what those look like. The estimated cost of this feature had been already included in the construction cost estimates, which came in at $375,000 for approximately a 2,000-square-foot splash pad. It's a unique feature in the sense that we have some small, what we'll call play features. They're not necessarily splash pads at some of our other pools, but not a separate amenities like this would be. Currently in the valley, Tempe Town Lake has one. It is a destination park where people and parents drive to have their toddlers participate in that activity, as well as at Chandler, I believe it's Desert Breeze, has a splash pad. The advantages, those would be the advantages. The things that we would need to consider is that it does have frequent surface maintenance. When we look at a lazy river, this particular amenity would cost, similar to the standing wave machine, approximately $1 million. Depending on its size, would take up to 3,000 to 10,000 square feet. We anticipate the average age group that would experience that would be from 5 to an adult. The advantages, again, it would be a unique amenity to the area. However, the space is limited. And again, I apologize for this amateur representation of the river here. This was my inadequate attempt to draw that onto a PDF that I couldn't manipulate very well. So obviously, folks that can design these a little better than I can, they would have to move around the footprint and so forth to get that to work on this particular
site.
You
have a future petroglyph. I'm sure there's a market for it, but you have a future there.
After I did, it looked like a dog, and it could be a dog park. So, let me back up. The one thing for consideration, again, is the space, and we're working with, or we've put in some questions to the architects and the designers to make sure that this thing, that the Lazy River would be able to fit on this footprint, and they say that it probably could, but we'd have to move some things around. The next is a flume or a speed slide. This particular picture is a little different than any of the slides that we've done at some of our other pools. I think if we were to put this in and Mayor Hawker was to race a Mesa Public Schools official, we'd put him on the slide on the right, and it would be a guaranteed win. I think he lost by a few seconds on the last one at Carson, so we would be able to accommodate that request. This particular amenity is around $750,000, $700,000. The actual footprint of the slide is around $2,000, but in terms of the tank and the other things that would accompany this, we'd need approximately 6,000 square feet. The age would be 7 to an adult. This is a proven amenity. However, we do need to consider that we have slides at four of our other pools throughout the city. And it is a static amenity. The kids go down it two or three times and then, are on to other things. They do not increase their skill levels. It's a limited draw to the teen market. Now when we get into the standing wave amenity, the one that staff has recommended, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this type of an attraction, but as you can see on the pictures here, it can accommodate up to two riders at a time. They don't, I'll have a quick video here. We're having a little problem with the with this, but I think it should work now. And as you can see, the water's actually coming at you, so there's pumps up at the front. It shoots the water forward. You can boogie board, as you can see on the right, as well as what they call wave or flow board on the left. So you get some idea of what that particular feature would do. We provided in your packet an email. We had several meetings with the Waveyard representatives, and I'm sure you had the opportunity to read their email, that they are in support of this, that they feel that this would be an attraction that would increase activity and use in this particular sports. So when we now go into the cost of this amenity, it's $1 million, roughly takes 6,000 square feet. It does meet our trends that we have researched in terms of a dynamic amenity, appealing to our teen and active recreation markets. It's unique for the service area. The things that would need to be considered is that we would need to build experience with the operations and maintenance of this particular feature. You could see that it would be in the same location that we would put the slide if that was the one that would be chosen. With this, when we go over the funding, we see that we have on the revenue side quality of life funds in the tune of $5.9 million, a Mesa Public Schools contribution of $500,000 for a total budget of $6.4 million. When we look at the pool in and of itself, it's roughly coming in at $5 million with a standing wave amenity. Bringing it up to another $1 million and the splash pad at $375,000, we would be at a balanced budget of $6.4 million for this particular site at Rhodes. With that, I would like to turn it over to any questions or comments that you may have.
Tom? On the standing wave amenity, is that more staff intensive in order to
operate because somebody gets into the wave? Do they have 20 seconds that they can stay in before they have to get out to let somebody else in? Who enforces that? How does that operate?
Mayor and Councilmember Rawls, I have actually been to a site where they have this particular machine and took that footage there, so was able to watch this thing in action. And it, to some degree, it self-polices itself. As you can see, that unless you're an extremely good rider, you tend to fall. And normal protocol is that once you fall, you come back in the line. And so, however, those that have got it down, they do put a time limit on it so that they can exit out and allow the flow to continue.
Do they have a staff person there to enforce
they
that
have,
time limit?
Yes, and it would be no more staff than we would have at a slide or a lazy river at the slides. We have a lifeguard at the top and one at the bottom, and this would be the same. In fact, it could even be reduced. One less.
Okay. One other question about all these pools. The zero depth entry area, which it remains the same, is we're going to have the splash pad for the toddlers and maybe a little older. The standing wave is going to be for kids that are older than that. I just want to make sure that there's a place for the 3 to 7 year olds just to swim. You know, it's maybe static, but it's still kind of fun. Do we have a place for that?
And I think as you look at the zero depth entry, that ends up eventually is what goes to four.
0 to 3.5.
Three and
then
a half.
Four
three and a half feet. So there's still kind of that small to medium, and then you can get into the deeper pool there.
But there's
to
still
accommodate
place for people who are a little too big to stand out on the splash pad and not big enough or old enough to take the wave.
We would have that in that area. And the one neat feature about some of the new technology that's coming out with this particular, the Flow Rider, is that you can now adjust the wave and the speed to where you can slow that down to where younger and younger participants can experience that.
Okay. I'm comfortable with the staff recommendation, Mayor. I do, however, want to take exception to one of the objectives, which is your second one about teen skill development and socialization. I really don't think it's the job of local government to increase people's socialization skills, but since I'll just be the person not buying that particular part of the objective, I just didn't want anyone to construe me as buying into that.
We'll make sure we don't establish or schedule a team building activity at that pool for a Okay. I agree with staff recommendation also. I've always liked the splash pools. I've seen a lot of kids with a little cone bucket that fills full of water and dips, and it's very interactive, and I think it's a good experience into a water environment for a child to not be fearful and then teach them how to swim and put their head underwater and all the things you have to go through in order to be so that you're not a potential victim of a drowning at some point, and hopefully they can train lifeguards and have a pretty good aquatics program here in the city of Mesa, as we've been noted for a number of years. So, and I think that the new features like this, I think you're right, it'll draw from a pretty good substantial area, and I think there'll be people that'll want to attend that pool to try out that feature. So let's give it a shot. If we're going to do it, let's make sure it's successful, and I think those amenities will help that. Mike?
Any chance, Rhett, that we would extend the season with this in place?
Absolutely, and we're looking into that as we, and based upon your direction on the 27th, we have a Parks Board meeting today where we will be talking about our strategic placement of pools, of parks, and so forth throughout the city. And so as we look at that, we will be looking at service areas and trying to move things around so that we can, one, expand times of certain pools, openings, and so forth, and shrink down others that the participation rates are not there. So we will certainly be looking into that and expanding this one.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Vice Mayor.
I support your recommendation. I want to go back though to this strategic issue here, which is that we made some decisions a week ago, 2 weeks ago, whenever it was we had this conversation, that we're shifting a long-standing tradition in this community of having every junior high have the same kind of pool amenities. And what we're looking at is a couple of pools, one on the east side, one on the west side, potentially, that are more competitive pools. And then we're looking at one that is in the boundary areas of each high school so that the high schools can do this. We're sitting here talking about the city aspect of things, but much of the use of these pools is occurring in the school district, not in the city of Mesa. And I worry that in the broader discussion, people who are tuning in today that didn't tune in a couple of weeks ago aren't really aware of what that is. I'm glad you're taking this to the Parks Board. I'd really like their buy-in on that new model. If they don't buy into the new model, then they have to help us figure out, you know, where the money would come from, given the fact that it would be some time before we would have parks bonds potentially on the ballot again. I think that needs to be introduced in the equation as well. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
The mic on. You need a motion. In fact, I think everyone's.
Oh, we heard you.
Presentation. Okay. Discussion. Number four, acknowledging receipt of minutes. We have three. Motion and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Passes. Hear reports on meetings and our conferences attended. Any updates from anyone? Okay. Scheduling the meetings, general information. Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. A reminder, we do have a Transportation Infrastructure Committee meeting following the study session today. We'll have our next council meeting be October 15th. I also want to remind the council that we have GAIN. It will be Saturday, October 20th, and so hopefully you're getting that information. I think we're trying to get the locations and the neighborhoods. But also, I want to make sure and invite the council. Some of you, I know that's already on your calendars, but I want to make sure the entire council is aware of an opportunity we have on October 26th at 8 a.m. as part of the our strategic plan development for Southeast Mesa. We are HDR will be hosting Mr. John Cassadra, who is a professor from North Carolina, who will be here in Mesa making a presentation to the council, well, inviting to the council and the community, his experience in working with developments related around the concept of the Aerotropolis concept, where the airport is the central business district. It's a unique opportunity to get him here in Mesa. So what we're suggesting is we're going to invite the entire community or anybody who'd like to come and listen to him. That's at 8 a.m. on the October 26th. That'll be the first part of the day that he'll be there to make a presentation and to answer questions about his experience both internationally and nationally in working with airports and making them the center of a business district, and they call them airport cities. Later in the afternoon, there'll be a smaller group that will be doing a visioning session with HDR, but we wanted to make sure the council was aware of that opportunity on the 26th. At 8 a.m., we'll get you more information. And then finally, we're looking at November 8th, which is a Thursday, to do what we would normally call our council retreat. We would do it really as more of an extended study session that day, where we would bring some topics that have some extended discussions about whether it's the forecast or whether it's a discussion on where we are with the Pinal County land sales and other topics that we will be preparing that day. So I guess we'll need to check with your calendars, but we'd like to maybe have that council study session, I guess we want to call it retreat study session, extended maybe even all the way up to lunch or maybe a little bit after. But we'll check with your calendars and see about your availability on that day. We'd like to spend some time having some significant discussions on day to get some direction from council on some of these kind of significant topics that are before us through the rest of the next year. So, thank you, Mayor.
Just for the record, I will be out on vacation on Monday and Thursday meetings of next week. I'll probably try to give you some input today on who I like off the candidates for the interviews, just as one voice in the process. But I given where I'm going to be, I'm probably going to have a hard time calling in on Monday night's meeting. Do we know what time that meeting's going to start yet?
The
Monday night study session?
Oh.
Where the discussion...
Council. I think we were... I guess that'll really be where the council is after the interviews. Let's see, you're doing interviews on the 18th.
Monday's, the 15th study session where the...
I'm sorry.
Where it gets narrowed
down. I'm ahead
down.
Of myself. Okay.
That's all right.
The 15th is the narrow... to deciding how many. We have 12. I guess I kind of looked at the council. How much time do you think you're going to need for that discussion? Is that a 30-minute discussion? Is that... We would normally start about quarter after the hour, I think, for a normal review without any...
You don't have anything else on the agenda?
Wasn't planning on putting anything else on at this point. So we could schedule it maybe 30 minutes discussion, 4:45?
Oh, I think on the 15th, I'm recommending 3.
With the 3 to 5, right? Correct. That's all you were going to do?
Okay. Well, so that's all we're... If that's all we're doing, then I
won't call in for that.
Oh. We'll let you know.
That doesn't mean that that's my recommendation. It's going to be like anything else. If it's not concurred with and there's somebody else that jumps off the sheet to everyone else, that would have to. So we still need that discussion.
Some discussion will take place that day, I'm assuming, on the Monday before, on the 15th.
But I just... That opens up a whole lot more issues, but... people feel extremely strongly about someone, they certainly have the opportunity to voice their opinion at that. Would be my thought process. I'd want to if I was a council member. All right. And I, having 12 submittals, was very pleased with the response from the community in District 5 that a lot of people were interested in, and went through some pretty significant work in getting some recommendations and comments on what people wanted to accomplish. I thought had quite a spectrum to them, but were very well thought out, so I congratulate those people that took that effort to apply for them. All right. Are there any requests to speak this morning?
Calling in also on Monday. Okay. In New Orleans, but I'm calling.
All right. Okay. Any requests to speak?
No speakers, ma'am.
All right. Then the motion and second to adjourn the study session. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. We are adjourned.